Hey there, dear listeners. I just wanted to hop on before we begin to let you know that we've got something very interesting we're cooking up. We're going to be taking a little break from the Badlands for the month of October to throw something special into your feeds. For a little teaser of what we've got in store, stick around to the end of the episode. But in the meantime, on with the show.
Welcome back to Mage Hand High Five. I'm your Dungeon Master, Casey Pappas, and with me, ranked from least to most likely to make a deal with an eldritch being...
Ooh, I like that.
Up first, Max Weinberg.
Hey, 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 it's Max. I didn't know where I was going to go with that hello. I'm playing Stump Steenling, and one of us has made a deal with an eldritch being, and one of us is not. It's up to you to decide which is which.
Mm. Next, Rowan McStay.
Hi there, I am Rowan McStay, playing Salome Briar. And listen, while I might believe in the eldritch beings, I know better than to make deals with them.
And Robin Langenhop.
Hi, I'm Robin Langenhop, playing Hayden Kincaid, and I have been claimed by the woods.
Whoa, and this is how we find out?
I mean, I was obviously some kind of chaotic fey creature. We knew this already.
And with that, let's dive right in. Last time on Mage Hand High Five, the group was split up in the midst of two fights. Hayden and Stump fought a fully revived Rockland, while Salome helped fend off riverbank vultures as V collected wisps. As the fight took a turn for the worst, Stump's amulet appeared to him. Now taking on a cartoonish visage, it introduced itself as Tom and offered a deal to Stump. Power in exchange for an amulet to the chest. Stump agreed, and with Tom's aid, the group took out Rockland and the vultures. Victorious, all three fell unconscious and awoke at the river's edge. Each experienced a vision, with Hayden being asked, "Who are you?" Salome being asked, "Who is your violence for?" And Stump being pulled away from the river entirely. When we last left off, Tom prepared to take his half of the bargain from Stump. So what better place to start then with Stump?
Ooh.
Stump, you stand in the middle of the city of Black Glass.
Oh, that's... Oh.
Shit.
Here we go.
I didn't think that's where we left it last time.
We're in it. New.
It's glistening dark towers cast no shadows under the sun directly above. It's high noon. There's a pistol at your side. Across from you hovers Tom. He wears a cartoonishly large cowboy hat, fringed boots, and a holster at his side. No pistol. He rolls a cigarette and pops it in his mouth.
Town ain't big enough for the two of us, so I guess you better head on inside.
Before you can ponder what that means, a voice deep beneath the sands whispers, "Draw." You draw and fire your pistol, and with an anticlimactic toot, it dispenses a small white flag with bang written on it.
What is happening?
Tom, in turn, points a finger at you and shouts, "Pew pew!" Your chest explodes as if it were hit with a blunderbuss. You fall backward, falling, falling, falling. Wham! You land on a cold, hard surface. You try to get up, but your hands and feet are bound. You're tied to a set of railroad tracks, and the ground beneath you begins to rumble. As you struggle, Tom appears at your side, tipping back his hat.
"Well, well, partner. I guess crime doesn't pay, you old cattle rustler."
He sort of looks at you and says, "I'm just having a little fun. I ain't gonna kill you, Stump." He doesn't want you dead.
I think Stump, at kind of the first time he stopped moving this entire time, just lets out a scream. Just. Just a full breath of scream.
As you scream, Stump, you look down. The oncoming train is in view now. The round front is an amulet. The headlamp pulses red. And Tom whispers in your ear, "But hey, if it's anything, you'll be going home soon." And then he leans back and says, "Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam and the skies are not cloudy all day." And as he finishes, the train collides with you and pop, you wake up.
What the fuck? I like tear off my clothes.
I mean, is it safe to assume that we woke up from that?
Stump.
No.
Stump, you are sitting on the platform in the center of the cavernous room where you all fought Rockland and Moribund. Laid on either side of you are Hayden and Salome, both apparently still unconscious. Maggie, who has been sitting next to Salome, jolts at your sudden screaming.
Heavens! Gee, you, son, you really got me.
Yeah, I tear off my shirt.
She looks at you and says, "Oh, all right." You tear off your shirt. Set deep in the middle of your sternum is the amulet, pulsing, ba-bum, 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 fully synced with your heartbeat. As you look at it, the pulse quickens in time.
What you got going on there, Scout?
This is, a problem, but it's how we survived that fight.
Okay.
I don't know too much about it right now, but I think it's something that all, at least the four of us, might need to discuss soon, sooner rather than later.
That seems like it might not be a bad idea.
I'm gonna try something, Maggie, just to see if it's any different than it was before. I'm gonna go run into like an abandoned tunnel.
You fully just up and leave, and she goes, oh.
Yeah, I'll be back. I'm just trying to get away in case it's a bad thing.
Okay.
And then when I get kind of, I don't know, 300-400 feet away, I'm just going to click the button.
Oh.
You click the button. The full extent of the map appears now. The line that you saw before that sort of trails off the end, the full thing is visible. The map zooms out and zooms in as if you are in control of it.
Do I recognize anything on it?
You recognize nothing. This area is supposedly deep, deep in a mountain range, which does not correspond to where you are in the Badlands.
I click it to turn it off, or snap my fingers, or just think whatever I need to do to turn it off.
You think to turn it off, and it turns off.
Okay. I go back to Maggie and say I might have made a mistake.
You all right there?
Yeah. That door we mentioned before, I think I just made a deal with it to save our lives.
Okay.
I don't really know what's going to happen about it. It was kind of vague, but it was either that or die, so I picked live.
Well, shoot. We can't always choose the way we sing our songs. And sometimes you got to do your best just to keep singing them. From the looks of things, you're still here.
I think so, yeah.
Whatever this, she points at the amulet, wants from you, hasn't gotten it yet.
That's one way to look at it.
Well, that seems like a tomorrow problem.
You know what is a today problem? And she points to Hayden and Salome and says, these two are stone cold out. And I don't know about you, but I ain't got the strength to carry them both.
Could I try something first?
You can try whatever you like.
Stump just slaps both of them.
Oh my God.
Like a wake up slap.
It's a good thing we leveled up because Salome was at like 6 HP.
Okay, this is non-lethal.
Stump can't non-lethal hit that hard. Slap. What are we talking about?
Yeah, I have a -1 to my punch. So
you both gain a point of health. You slap them both. They remain unconscious.
Do you still have that cart?
Sure do. Cart comes sailing down. She says, I thought about loading them up, but I figured I'd wait for somebody to wake up first.
Well, now that I'm here, let's load them.
Hey, real quick, what do we do about yonder youngin'? She nods, and still wrapped in vines is the unconscious Dr. Aletna Moribund, laying about 3 feet from her still disproportionately monstrous husband.
Oh, we gotta bring her too. She's probably got information we need. I don't know, Salome wanted her alive.
I tell you this, there ain't room for all of us in the cart.
I mean, so what, we leaving everybody that's unconscious and just you and me going back? What are you suggesting?
Well, why don't we give them like an hour? You know, if they're not awake by then, maybe we take trips.
Sounds good. I guess while we're just kind of sitting here.
Sure.
You've been looking through all these mines, right? For a long time?
As many as I could without getting caught by those shamblers or whatever you want to call them.
You see any, like, fancy rocks lying around while you've been in here?
Fancy rocks?
Yeah. Like a special rock?
I can't say it's been at the forefront of my mind, but shoot, there's rocks everywhere. You're bound to find one.
Oh, no, but it's got to be like, can't just be like a rock, you know? It's got to be like a special rock, you know, like maybe like extra shiny or clear or a different color.
You know what? Whenever I go through a new place to me, I tend to like to pick up little doodads and trinkets and here. And she pulls something out of her knapsack. It is a polished dark gray stone. It looks clouded. Swirls appear along its surface. It's smooth, oval-like, perfect for skipping a stone. She tosses it to you and says, how's about that?
Oh, Sally's gonna love it.
Now, who's Sally?
Well, that's my kid. I told her when I had to leave, I would, find her some special rocks. I don't know why, but I just promised, and so I gotta do it. Can't let your kids down.
No. You can't. And as Maggie says that, she looks over at Salome. She says, Stump, you love your family.
Of course.
Well, whatever this is, she taps the amulet on your chest. We're going to figure out what it wants. We're going to beat it. And I'll do whatever it takes to help you, all right?
I appreciate it. And do what I can to help Salome in whatever way she needs.
She says, she's a strong kid.
Yeah.
Takes after her mom. And as she says that, Salome, you wake. You're in your incorporeal form. You're no longer at the river's edge, but you are still on the riverbank. That place where wisps are visible and where V walks. In fact, as you sit upright, V crouches next to you. You're back.
Did we do it? Did you get all the wisps across the river?
You look. The wisps are still as they are. V says, I couldn't risk them while you were unconscious.
Well, do you need a minute? Do you need to take them across now?
I can.
Yeah, don't worry about me. Do you need help? What can I do? I want to finish this.
Just rest. And they take more trips as you keep watch. Finally, after picking up the last soul from Rockland's body, moving it across, and coming back, they seem spent. And they say, that's
More trips than I've ever had to take in one go.
Well, hey, I think we did it. Shoot. I'm sorry I couldn't fight them off by myself. I tried, but they were just kind of... It was a little overwhelming.
You did well.
It's kind of fun helping you out, circumstances and all.
It's good to have help. It's been a long time. As they say that, you notice something that you haven't noticed before.
Looking at V, crouched beside you, heavy, filthy duster, knapsack, long-brimmed hat with tassels, veils between the brim of their hat and the face within, blue eyes burning through it all, but something more. Deep within them is a wisp. Unlike the other wisps that you've seen, which glow in varying shades of blue, V's wisp is white. And as you sit there looking at V's wisp, the thought pops in your head that you could reach out and touch it.
Oh.
Do you?
Why? I want to ask, but I don't want to get in trouble.
As you look, V begins to turn from you. You see an opportunity.
Oh, I don't just touch it as they turn around. I say, V, do you trust me?
I suppose that I do.
I reach a hand out and say, may I? You don't have to, but I'd be honored if you'd let me.
You reach a hand out. They flinch, and they seem to think about it. Roll persuasion.
That is a 26.
Yeah.
You don't have to. I think I'd like to get to know you better. It's always nice to know your friends. If there's anything I can give you in return, I will.
You reach out a hand, and as you do, you see the glint of the locket around their neck. And they do not resist as you touch their wisp. Images appear before you. You see a long-haired child sitting on the steps of a house. Their parents argue inside. Their father exits, stops, and hands them a revolver, a gift. And then the father turns away, exiting their life. Another picture. The child's hair is short now, and they are a child no more. They practice quick draw poses in a mirror. The silver revolver deep in a holster at their side. In another, you see them gun down a man in a duel in the face of a cheering crowd. They seem shaken, but emboldened by the crowd's response. In the next, they're a legend. Free drinks wherever they go. A crowded pub cheers their name, save one unimpressed man in the back, a simple shopkeeper.
Do I hear the name?
You do not.
Hmm.
The gunslinger and the shopkeeper lock eyes, and a connection is formed. Beside a river, the gunslinger and the shopkeeper kiss beneath a full moon. You blush at the sudden intimacy of the scene. The shopkeeper removes a golden locket from his neck and hands it to the gunslinger. As these tableaus pass before your eyes, you feel the presence of another person, and you know that V stands next to you watching as these images roll by.
I just kind of offer them my hand.
They take it, flinchingly at first, but then slowly, their fingers clasp yours.
What was his name?
They shake their head. They seem to break up.
I can't. It's been so long.
Maybe that's something I could try to find for you while we're traveling.
The next tableau appears before you. You see the shopkeeper place a hand on the gunslinger's pistol
in an attempt to take it from their hands. The gunslinger holds tight to the pistol, refusing to let it go. In the next, you see a duel. The gunslinger and their opponent across from them. At the last moment, the gunslinger's bullet goes wide. The first miss in a long time, hitting not their target, but another in the crowd. As the crowd clears, the gunslinger stands, and the shopkeeper lies. Rain falls as the gunslinger kneels beside their loved one and cries to the heavens, asking for something, anything, a chance. And in the next, you see the gunslinger as they are now. Tassels, duster, veils, carrying their loved one down to the riverbank. And then it disappears.
Were you able to save him by becoming this? Or just help him get across?
He waits for me. When my task is over, he will live once more.
Then you see their hand clasps the locket still around their neck.
Fee, honey, I am so sorry. How can we end this for you? What can we do? What can I do?
I don't know. All I know is that someday this will end, and I will know happiness once more. Until then, I am just grateful to not be alone.
You really loved him. Not too many people would do something like this for the person they care about. I'm sure that's worth something.
They look down, and you see the silver pistol in the holster at their hip. And they say, I had to.
Can I tell you something that I never really told anybody since all this went down? I really cared for Thaddeus. I mean, it wasn't a good thing we had by any means, but I don't think you can live with someone for so long without finding something to care about. And I know it's not the same. You know, the two of you were so clearly very much in love. But having been on the other side of that gun, it breaks your heart. It ain't something I'd ever wish on anybody, and I'm sorry you had to go through it.
Thank you.
I want to see what we can do to maybe get you out of this. In the meantime, you ever picked anybody up from the other side of the door?
No.
Hmm.
Never. I don't know what lies beyond the door.
Well, I guess we got a couple mysteries to solve, don't we?
And with that, you bolt upright. Stump.
Yeah, you just see Stump over you, just like hand back, just like
Stump,
ready to go.
Stump, holy hell, come on.
What? Ah!
You can't just...
Well, you were asleep.
You can't just slap something. I was talking to V, Stump. I was asleep the whole damn fight. Holy shit.
It was like 3 hours.
Oh, hi, Aunt Mags. We're alive.
She envelops you in a hug.
It says, oh, dear heart.
I was worried. You really got my goat there.
Yeah, well, what am I doing if I don't worry you a little bit?
Shoot, girl, half these gray hairs are yours.
I pluck one out.
Hey! You better hold on to that.
I'll keep it for good luck. And I put it in my holy symbol next to the note from my mother.
As that happens, Hayden is still unconscious beside you. Only two people left dreaming in this room. Hayden.
Yes?
You are still by the river. Its waters tumble past you. You have not seen anyone come or go in minutes? Hours? Days? You don't know what time it is. Does time pass here? Surely there must be someone else here, right? Do you explore?
I start to walk up the river, there's part of me that feels like if anyone's going to come for me, it will be Salome. And if I veer too far off from the river, then I might not be found and I might not be able to come back. So I start going, but I don't step away from the river at all.
You walk along its edge, keeping a sharp eye on the tree that you left. The waters glisten in the sunlight, shining a beautiful thousand different colors. Across the river is a large wood, and you glance over at it from time to time. And as you do, you notice figures in the wood, darting between the trees. You can't make them out. And as you're wandering and looking over, you nearly trip over another person on the riverbank, sitting beneath a tree. And you hear, "Oh! Hey, watch it!"
Oh my goodness. Excuse me, sorry. I wasn't exactly expecting to run into anyone. Hello?
You look down and see a small human woman sitting beneath a tree. Iron dark gray hair pulled tightly into a bun. She sort of looks up at you and she says, "Huh. I ain't expect to see anyone on this side of the river. Of course, never been here before, so how should I know how it works?"
"Well, I was gonna say, have you been here long, but if your experience has been anything like mine, that's not the clearest question to answer."
"Yeah, I can't exactly. I don't know. Been here a while. Ain't been here long. Can't really tell."
"Do you know where you are?"
"Seems like a threshold."
"You could say that. As far as I understand it, this is something I only heard about in stories. Stories from reliable sources, I might add, but still, stories nonetheless."
"What kind of stories do you hear?"
"Well, the same ones you have, except that my personal storyteller has some connections that the rest of us don't got."
"Well, I'd be mighty interested to hear what those connections are."
"I'd be mighty interested to hear who you are."
She looks at you and she says, "Fair enough. Sit down."
"Don't got nowhere else to go."
You sit down next to her. She says, "I'm Lila. Lila Breyer."
"Oh! Well, this just became a completely different conversation."
She cocks her head and she says, "You heard of me?"
"Well, in a manner of speaking, we've met. Though I don't imagine you're fully remembering that interaction." Interaction might be a little bit strong of a word. "Let me back up a bit. Well, I am good buddies with your niece, Salome."
"Hmm."
"And I have met your sister, Maggie. And I feel like I'm about to stumble ass backward into a very awkward conversation, and I'm realizing that in this moment. Do you know what your current situation is away from this river?"
She starts to furrow her brow and she says, "I remember." And then she stops. She looks at you and she says, "I remember enough. Who are you, by the way? I didn't catch your name."
"You know, the last time I was asked that question, I feel like I gave an unsatisfactory answer. My name is, well, the name I've been using is Hayden Kincaid. I've gone by several other names, none of which are actually my name either. I'm having a bit of an identity crisis these days, but suffice to say is I'm a friend of Salome's who has been helping me through some rough stuff and hopefully will be helping me through one more bit of rough stuff, but that's the simplest answer. I can go on and on with more if you're interested."
She sort of cocks an eye at you and she says, "Eh, you're young. It's what identity crises are for."
"If anything, I'm taking on too many identities. I need to narrow it down."
She says, you said you knew Salome.
Yes, ma'am.
So you're from three?
Yeah. Not exactly something I'd be proud to claim, but that's where I grew up.
Well, then you're sensible. Threed is a den of vipers.
If it makes you feel any better, I believe that Salome would agree.
What do you mean?
Salome Briar is not Salome Jameson, and has not been for some time.
This gets her attention.
She broke off from the Jamesons rather violently and has been spending the last few weeks trying to get back to you.
Get back to me.
That's right.
I don't know why she'd want to do that.
Well, to my understanding, she's been trying to tell you.
She looks across the river. She says, Aiden, look across the river. Tell me what you see.
Well, I've been looking across there for a while now. I see the forest. I see some curious onlookers. I don't know, maybe they don't want to be seen or what, but they've certainly been watching us.
You see, Hayden, I got some stories of this place of my own. You're not the only one with a connection. My sister, she had the gift too. She could see this place. Told us stories about it. Between you and me, kind of burned me up a little bit.
Oh, yeah?
Beth Briar, always off, following her heart and not her head. Of course she would find a place like this. You got any siblings, Hayden?
In a sense, I had to collect my own.
They still count. Well, shit, I spent my whole life trying to control my siblings. Beth was always one thing or another. If she wasn't here, she weren't there. Never could keep track of that girl. And Maggie, good Lord, I don't know what goes on in her brain.
She's a spitfire, I'll tell you what. I'm a fan of that lady.
Just an endless loop of music goes on in that brain of hers.
Hey, my brother tried to kill me not a few days ago.
He did now.
If we're comparing siblings, I believe that you got the nicer end of that deal.
Boy, some of the things that Beth got herself into, I might give you a run for your money.
That is a collection of stories I would love to hear.
Well, then one day she had Salome. And when I tell you, that little girl is exactly like her damn mother. Always leading with her heart. And to tell you the truth, Hayden, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but it's scared me. Scared me. Because now I've got two of them. Hell, now I got three of them. And then Beth died. And all I had left was Maggie and Beth, and Maggie and Salome. And how am I supposed to keep hold of both of them with these two hands?
You know, it's funny. Salome and I had a rather similar conversation recently. But I was the one who was running around without using my head. And she was the one telling me I need to start listening to that. So I think there's more of you in her than you've seen.
Well, I don't know if that's a good thing.
I think she'd like to tell you herself. I know you've been sitting by... Now that I know who you are, I know how long you've been sitting on this riverbank, and it's about time you started walking again. There are people waiting for you who would love to see you moving.
She says, tell you the truth, Hayden. I always had to be the fighter. I always had to be the protector, the strong one. But I'm scared. Scared of going back, seeing that little girl.
As someone who has had to be told that they don't always have to be the fighter, and that they can lean back sometimes. It's funny, this is the most surreal and literal out-of-body experience I have ever had. Not only am I throwing these words of wisdom at you that have just been told to me, I'm literally outside of my body. I don't actually know what's going on right now. I'm acting like I do, but do you know you're a tree? You are literally a tree right now. I just gotta lay all the cards out on the table. You are a tree, and you need to not be a tree anymore. I got too deep in the metaphor. I need to come back a bit.
She chuckles. And it's the first time you've seen her crack a grin at all. She chuckles and she says, "Damn, Lila Breyer is a scaredy cat. God damn, can't be afraid of my niece. Can't be afraid of my..." She looks across the river. Hayden, roll a persuasion check.
It's only an 8.
Okay. Lila looks across the river. And you do too. And as you do, you see the figures darting between the trees. And you see their children.
Oh, do I recognize any of them?
You recognize all of them.
You asked if I had siblings?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
She follows your gaze across the river and she says, "It's a hell of a thing. Hell of a thing. But I guess I'm the fool for holding on. I guess everyone's the fool for holding on."
Here's the thing, Miss Briar. I don't know if you want me to call you Lila or what, but...
Call me whatever you want. I'm old, I've heard it all.
You think you gotta be strong for everybody. There are people back where you left behind that they want to see you again, not because they need you, not because you gotta hold everybody up, but because they want to see you. You're not on the other side of the river yet. That time will come. Comes for everybody, but you don't have to be done. You can stop stretching your arms out into little bark fingers or whatever the hell's going on there, but you can just lean back. Rest for a bit. Let someone else take the load. Say hi to your fucking niece. Look how much family I have on the other side of the river there. Your family's still waiting for you.
She says, "I think I'm going to sit here for a bit." But you see her taking these words in. That this is maybe the first time Lila's been talked to this way. And as she begins to sit down again, Hayden, you feel hands on your shoulders. And you hear a voice whisper in your ears, "You're not supposed to be here."
Is this V, I take it?
As you say that, you wake up.
This episode of Mage Hand High Five is sponsored by Multitude Productions and their actual play podcast, Join the Party, as part of their Direct Creators Support Initiative. Multitude Productions believes that podcasts are for people, not corporations, and that the actual play community is full of incredible creators telling some of the most imaginative stories in all of entertainment. Multitude offers high quality and affordable production services and consulting to help podcast creators of any size capitalize on their own successes. Join the Party is an actual play podcast focused on genre-pushing storytelling and celebrating the artistry of its cast and collaborators, as well as being a love letter to the art form of actual play. Join the Party has multiple seasons available now, with stories ranging from swashbuckling pirate tales in a world of plants and bugs to a weird summer camp beset by monsters. Here's looking at you, Camp Craven fans. Tune in every Tuesday for new episodes of Join the Party. And who knows, if we're your third favorite actual play, they might just become your first or second. We hope you'll check out Multitude and Join the Party at jointhepartypod.com or connect with them at Join the Party Pod on Instagram, Blue Sky, Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter. Also, be sure to let them know that Mage Hand High Five sent you and that their Direct Creator Support Initiative is working. And with that, on with the show.
Do you love audio fiction stories like Welcome to Night Vale or Old Gods of Appalachia? Are you looking for your next favorite podcast?
Or maybe you love actual play shows like Critical Role, but don't always have time to sit down to a 3-hour show with hundreds upon hundreds of episodes.
Then you'll love The Adventures of Bud and Herb, a podcast that is made to binge with episodes around 30 minutes of non-stop, irreverent, yet wholesome fun set in an immersive fantasy world.
Follow along as best friends Bud and Herb, that's us, race against time to find an elusive, monstrous cryptid that has snatched a little boy from our idyllic little town of Mistress Glen.
I'm Bud, the deep gnome rogue.
And I'm Herb, the turtle folk barbarian chef. Each episode, we dig deeper into the mystery of the Cinderwood Walker.
A beast so terrifying, it can kill with only its stench. Find out if we live to smell tomorrow.
Listen to the adventures of Bud and Herb wherever cryptids hide.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at diceexploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stump is above you, hand raised.
Salome is too.
I've heard of lay on hands, but this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I tried lay on hands. Now I'm trying slap on hands. We got to get you up.
Hey, Briar family.
Howdy.
Hi.
I met Lila.
Oh, no shit. Where is she?
Well, she's by the riverside, on our side of it, but...
Okay.
She needed some sense slapped into her.
I'm ready.
No, I... Actual sense, not slapping.
Oh, okay.
What's going on? What's happening?
I think she feels some guilt for staying where she's been for so long. I tried to explain things to her as best as I could. I channeled you, honestly. I don't know. It might mean more coming from one of y'all than from me, but...
Well, Max, you might be able to talk to her. I don't know that I could. I mean, maybe, but I can try.
You have that connection to V, to your river buddy or whatever they are. Maybe you can use that to connect to her. She's on our side, but she's staring out there. I don't know if she feels like she's allowed to come back or supposed to come back. I don't know. She might just need some family connection.
Well, of course she's supposed to come back. She has to come back. Max, I can go if it would help her come back. I will do what I need to do.
Well, why don't we all make the journey back together now that we are all awake? And first things first, let's all breathe in. Y'all had a long day. And it seems like, from what you've been saying, Hayden, that Lila ain't made a choice yet, which means we still got time. So let's make the best of it, all right?
Where are we going to put her? I kind of gesture to Aletna. I got some questions for her.
Why don't we load her into the cart and we all head back? It's a long trek, but I don't know of a better option.
All right, fine by me. Wait, hold on. Sorry. Stump, why is your shirt off and what the hell's that in your chest?
Nurse, well, oh, shit.
How do I put this? I made a deal... I think, with the red-eyed god to help us live through that fight. And this was the collateral.
Well,
are
shit.
You gonna go crazy and kill us all?
I have no idea, because I forgot to ask when I had the chance.
That would have been a very helpful question. You and forgetting to do very important things.
Listen, honey... Hold on. Okay, so it just wanted to get the amulet in your chest. Did he not tell you?
No.
Did not tell you what he was doing with it. Didn't give you any information. You didn't think to ask for any information. There was no, like, follow-up questions.
I was kind of preoccupied with getting hurled through hell and wherever the City of Black Glass is. I heard, like, a deep voice in the ground that was like, I forget what he said exactly, but it was like, your time's up or something like that. And the coin guy, whose name is Tom, shot me, and then I was on the ground. And then there was the amulet in my chest. And then when I woke up, I did go run away. I did press a button. It's a better map now.
Oh, shit. Well, Stump, your stories are always so thrilling.
Yeah.
But are you possessed? That's the part where I'm really focused.
I don't think so.
Sometimes you manage to tell the most interesting stories in the least interesting way.
Let me tell you, I got that from my dad.
I was gonna say, I did understand all of the individual words you said, but in the order and presentation that you gave them, I was very lost.
Okay, well, shit. So it's a better map. So wait, that might mean that we might have a way to find the City of Black Glass.
I mean, maybe. It doesn't really look anything, and Stump lays on the ground and clicks it.
Oh, you gotta lay sideways to make it it's like a hologram?
I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
You lay on the ground, the map appears above you all.
I mean, we know I'm desecrated, but I don't know if you want to check again, see if I've changed at all.
Yeah, I think I can do that. I might just need till tomorrow or so to make sure I can get everything prepared.
Do we, and we're throwing Aletna in the...
I take Aletna and just, like, use what's left of the divine magic that I have to wrap her body in Briar's. Like, she is bleeding. And tightly, like, wrap her body in Briar's and very roughly throw her into the cart.
This looks like her workshop, kind of, right? More or less?
Yeah, this seems to be her little headquarters, yeah.
Could I just, like, search it for anything kind of interesting?
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh.
These are all tools beyond your knowledge in a field that you do not know anything about.
I don't know if there was, like, a notebook or anything like that.
You know what? Yeah, there is. There is a notebook which details the process by which to rip a soul out of a living being.
Oof.
There is a lot of technical jargon. So you would probably need someone deeply, deeply intelligent in this field to know what this means.
Yeah, I'll grab that and I'll kind of just show everybody, we got this notebook.
That ought to be burned before anybody else sees it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is information that needs to still exist.
I don't think it is. I think we get the information we can out of Aletna and then we burn this.
I think it's a little dangerous to hold on to, but not my choice.
I'll throw it into the bag of holding.
You do? You all begin to head back.
Yeah, so I think now is probably a really good time to just kind of let y'all know at home that the deal with Tom led Stump into kind of having a little bit of a class change. He's now gone full rogue and is the Soul Knife subclass for those that are interested, which is where those glowing red knives came from out of his hands. And we'll see how that changes. He's still got the poisoner feet, so we still got some poisons going on, but it's going to be a little bit less of a focal point moving forward.
Well, shit.
Big rebuild, yeah.
As we're moving back through these dark tunnels, Salome realizes she can't see anymore. and the goggles are just fucking mayonnaise.
You gotta have Stump fix these goggles. They are absolutely worthless.
Oh, Stump, it kind of hurts, actually. Did you do something to these?
Oh, this is the garlic aioli setting. Oops.
Oh, holy hell, Stump.
Why
can you just
do goggles have an aioli setting?
Oh,
why would they not have an aioli setting? There's
not
a Chipotle
everything
now.
Has to be mayonnaise.
Hey, you want some aioli, though? It's pretty good.
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want it.
Yeah, come on over here, get some.
Oh my god.
Do we have some potato wedges or something?
Nope, just spoons. As we're walking back, I think we see that Spoons the Tiefling has dropped their playing spoons. And I think we just eat a little bit of aioli with the spoons.
Please Nasty. Clean them first.
You take Spoons the Tiefling's spoons, the thing after which they have named themselves.
And eat just and a them, little bit of aioli.
And use them to eat mayonnaise. Excellent. Love that. This all happens as you're headed back. It's a long trek. You see the partially collapsed train tracks
off to the side, the minecart tracks. At one point, Hayden, Maggie hip checks you a little bit and says, "Hey, this is the part where I nearly died."
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about.
You might need to watch those close calls from now on. Listen, I don't think I can handle any more of those.
You're alive, right?
I just kind of cling to Maggie as we walk.
Maggie clings to you back, Salome, and says, "I sure am alive. You know what? I think I'm more alive now than I've ever been."
See, I did a good thing, right? No, I know for sure I did a very bad thing.
You continue. You make your way around the twists and turns. Is there anything you speak of in this time, or are you just dead set on getting to Lila?
Yeah, I think I'm thinking about how to approach things with Aletna. And I think I do say, "Hey, Aunt Max, you know the people of Blackthorn Hollow a little bit more than I do, but I do think we might want to keep Aletna somewhere out of sight for now. We can tell them where she is, but I don't want to make anything harder on people than it has to be."
"Might be a blessing for them to know, or to not know, that she's still here."
"Yeah, I haven't really known what to do with her. I mean, we can maybe hand her over to the people of the town, but I don't know that I want to give them something else to deal with."
I think this town's seen enough bloodshed."
"Yeah, I think you're right." And I think Salome hardens a little bit and says, "Well, suppose I'll just deal with her then."
Maggie narrows her eyes at you. She says, "What is that?"
"What's what?"
"There's a look in your eye I ain't seen before."
"It's Threed."
She nods. "Well, Threed or no, don't lose sight of who you are."
"Well, yeah, I mean, I can sure as hell try, but seems like every damn person from Threed wants all of us dead, so I don't really know what the hell else to do."
"Suppose I ain't never been to Threed, so I don't know for sure. Been to Echo. Had a hell of a time in Echo, but never been to Threed."
I think I take the quick subject change and go, "Well, we're about to go to Echo, so right after we finish up things with Aunt Lai." And I think just tries to skirt where this conversation might go.
Maggie says, "Well, shoot. When you head to Echo, you might have to tell me how it is." And she looks at you, and you can tell that while she has followed you into the next conversation, she has not forgotten the previous one.
While we're walking, since no one seems to be in much of a talking mood, Stump is exploring his newfound powers, summoning like these psychic blades and just like dismissing them, just kind of figuring out what's going on and throwing them and just kind of figuring it all out.
Stump, you're walking along, striking little poses.
Making little poses.
Making little poses.
You're striking little poses.
A little bit of Wolverine, just like claws going in and out. Just
These red blades, you throw them and they cast off into the darkness. And it's pretty sick. It's pretty cool. It's cool.
Yo, I'm not going to lie. I might not care what the other end of this deal is. This is sick as hell.
Here, Stump, come here. I can take a little bit more of a hit. Here, throw it at me.
No, no.
This does. It didn't look like the blade actually did any physical harm to Rockland when I touched him, so I might not throw this at you.
I mean, there are plenty of crazy people who hate us everywhere. You'll get the chance to use them.
Yeah, no, but I'm kind of curious.
We don't have to do any friendly fire to figure this out.
I mean, if you're really curious, I could throw it at you.
Yeah. You ever been hit with an imaginary knife
before?
Wait, come on.
Hold on. You're about to throw...
How am I the voice of reason in this group?
Yeah, well, I think I might be on Hayden's side with this one. You're about to throw it... What? They're not physical knives. They're emotional knives? You're about to throw emotional knives at my niece?
I don't really know what they are. They're not physical. Yeah, it's kind of just like this. And I rolled the 8 and just miss.
Solomon's armor class is an 18.
Sorry, it's a 9.
I'm going to try to catch it.
Oh, no. God.
That's a nat 1 to try to catch it.
You know what? It does hit you.
People, what are you doing?
The second it touches you, do I roll damage?
Yeah, roll damage. All right, here's what happens. Stump, you throw the knife. It goes wide, but Salome reaches out to catch it. And it whoom, passes straight through her palm.
I'm sorry, are you both 10-year-old rat? What are you doing?
Yeah, I do 10 psychic damage to you. And when the blade hits your hand, it just disappears.
Salome just cries a little bit and is like, yeah, that was pretty good. It's a little hurt your feelings, knife.
No.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. That kind of sounds like fun. You want to throw one at me?
Yeah, sure. I'll throw one at you.
All right.
I kind of want.
She sort of looks at you, Hayden, and says, I'm sorry. I kind of want to know how it feels. Come on.
It's interesting, for sure.
Really, if any of us was going to be playing with knives, it almost certainly would have been me.
That's a 14 to hit Maggie.
Maggie doesn't dodge it. She takes the hit.
Maggie takes 5.
You see her sort of double over. She goes, oh, that packs a hell of a punch.
Gets you right in the emotions, right?
Damn, girl, I felt things I hadn't felt in years.
Hayden, come on, Hayden.
No, absolutely
not. Come on, come try it.
Does no one else think this is very possessed behavior? Let me stab you. It will be fun.
I hit myself with a 24, and I deal myself 6 damage. Whoa, I do not like that feeling.
It's like a little melancholy, right? It's terrible.
It's kind of a hard time.
Come on. Everyone's doing it. Come on, let's go.
Oh, look, we're almost there.
It's about that time. It's about that time you all walk into the room where all the survivors are.
Sober up a little.
And the tone drops precipitously.
Sober up a little bit.
Everyone's got like a little bit of a headache from being stabbed except for Hayden.
And crying.
I just have coffee withdrawal.
Stump, on the way back, as you were stabbing through the...
the Briar family.
As you were stabbing through the Briar family, you were laughing, you were having fun. As that begins to die down, you hear whispers faintly. They seem to grow slightly louder as you get closer to your compatriots. Not loud enough to hear. You almost feel like you could reach out and touch them.
Still like a little like a white noise hum for any of y'all?
Nope.
Well, I did have tinnitus since the whole Forward Falls thing, but I thought that was all of us.
Okay, cool. I think I'm having one of those side effects of my deal right now.
Oh, is it one of the fun ones or one of the scary ones?
Yet to be determined.
Well, you want to try it out?
Fuck it, it's Thursday, which I think we said earlier.
I think it is Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, Stump kind of mentally reaches out to the whispers.
You reach out, and it's almost like forming a bridge between you and these whispers. And as you do so, the whispers become familiar. These whispers are Salome's. And you make a psychic link.
With my brain, Stump puts his hands to his fingers to his temples and just thinks loudly.
Can you hear me?
Oh my God, Stump.
Hey.
What'd you put in here? Get out of my mind. Is it those damn knives?
I don't know.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Is this it? Like, is this... Max, can you hear me? Hayden, can you hear me? Holy shit, Stump. We're talking with our minds. That's fun.
Right? Is this a good thing?
Okay, you know what? Can you just lower the volume a little bit, though? I know you only got one volume.
I canonically cannot just lower the volume.
Yeah, but like in my mind, could you just a little bit? Just think softer. God.
I think you might be able to do that.
Is this like an us thing? Can you do this with Hayden too?
Yeah, I can try. Stump stares at Hayden and once again puts fingers to his own temple and just goes,
hey.
Hayden, you feel sort of this secondary presence hovering near your mind, and then you hear Stump's, hey!
I turn to Salome immediately, grab her on the shoulders, and be like, Salome, it's happening. Stump's trying to possess me too.
I talk into their brain too and go, no, I think we're all here, honey.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know what? For stunt making a deal with some kind of evil god, honestly, we got a lot of little fringe benefits.
sure.
Might as well enjoy them.
This is pretty great, right?
Sorry, MX, we're talking in our minds.
This is one of my new abilities that I get for being a soul knife. It's called Psychic Whispers. I can basically make we're flavoring it as I can make a telekinetic group chat, a telepathic group chat between up to my proficiency bonus.
Yeah. So. I think the original text has it that they can only communicate with you, Stump, but we've talked and we're going to open up the party line a little bit. So you walk back in. Some of the survivors rush over to you. Daisy rolls over and envelops you, Salome, in a hug.
Oh, I just kind of collapse into Daisy and grab Wink and snuggle him real close.
Mirabelle comes running up. The medic comes running up and she says, I don't know what's going on with Lila. I've been doing my best.
Hey, you're doing great. Did something change? Did something happen?
I don't know. There was a point there where she started sprouting leaves.
Oh.
All over, and then I don't know. They're starting to fall. Come here.
Yeah. Thank you, dear heart. I appreciate you looking out for her.
You rush over to the roots of this tree. Lila is still embedded deep in its bark. You see that her hair has sprouted into flowers. Leaves appear on some of the branches, but they're reddening and beginning to fall. She doesn't look good.
Mechanics question before we get into this. Mm-hmm. Have we had a short rest between the Aletna fight and now?
I think yes. It was a long walk back.
So we would have taken a break.
Yeah, maybe you took turns in the minecart.
Oh, Aunt Lai. Okay.
As you approach the base, Stump, you hear faint whispers, sort of your psychic whispers ability. You hear whispers coming from the tree as well. But they are faint. As if someone is whispering from outside a door, whispering from down a hallway.
So Stump hears those whispers and kind of goes and walks up to the tree to kind of where Lila is in it and tries to mentally reach out to where those whispers are and bring in Ptolemy's whispers as well.
You reach out. You form a bridge with Lila, but it's shaky. It ain't a stone bridge. It's more like a rope bridge.
Lila, you there?
Huh? Someone there?
Yeah, I'm Stump. I'm friends with your niece, Salome, and also Hayden, who I heard you met recently. I've got Salome here with me. I don't really know how I'm doing this, and I'll try to stay out of your conversation, but hope you're doing well. We'll get you out.
And the bridge forms, Salome, between you and Lila.
I just kind of sit there and, feel what it's like to be in her presence again for a minute. And then just walk up and sit by the tree and just put a hand on it about where her heart is. Hey, Aunt Lai.
She doesn't say anything.
Look, I've been thinking about what I would want to say to you if I saw you again for about 10 years now. And now whatever I was wanting to say doesn't really seem like it's worth anything. I guess the only thing that I can say is that there has not been a day in the last 10 years that I have not just wanted to come home and see you. That I have not missed you. That I've not wanted to make sure that you're okay. And I guess the one good thing about you being a tree is that I get to just sit here and talk to you. And you can't run away. But you were right.
About everything. About Thaddeus, about Threed, about me. And I remember I told you a really long time ago that I didn't want to be anything like you. And I'm sorry about that. I regret saying that every damn day, because I think that if I were any more like you, maybe none of this would have happened. If I had half your strength, your self-assurance, your goodness, I'd be a much better person than I am now. You are, have always been, will always be part of me. I'm not asking your forgiveness, Aunt Lai. I can go as soon as you come back, but I want you to be okay. I need you to be okay. That's why I left Threed. That's why I'm here. I came here for Aunt Mags, but I also came here for you. And I don't care if you want me back or not. I love you, and I want you to come home. Please.
Salome, roll a persuasion check. And roll it with advantage.
If we got a short rest on the way over here, I'm going to use my Emissary of Peace to give myself a total of plus 13 to persuasion.
Salome, as you've been speaking, Maggie has taken her fiddle and she begins to play it slowly.
That's a 28.
At first, you don't hear anything. And you wonder, and you wonder, and you start to turn away when you hear a small girl, why would you ever come back for me?
What are you talking about? You're all I could think about.
I pushed you away.
You had every right.
I didn't. And if I crossed the river now, I'd never be able to look Beth in the eye. So I guess I can't yet. And as she says that, the flowers begin to recede from her head. You hear a as the bark begins to split. Cracks appear up and down the trunk, revealing arms, legs, a torso, until emerging from the tree is Lila Breyer. She collapses, too weak to stand, and you catch her, gently lowering her to the floor. She coughs. A flower petal coughs from her mouth.
I just hold her.
You hold her. She says, I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
How are you? I'm just glad you're back.
She sort of looks up and looks around the cavern. She says, can't say I'm too glad to be back. This place looks like hell.
Yeah, it basically is. I think you saved it, though.
She says, I'd have been a goner without y'all. She looks at you, Hayden. She says, without all of y'all. But enough wallowing. The hell you doing crying over your old dead tree aunt? We've got to get these people out of here. Salome, what in blazes were you thinking?
Listen, you got to just let me have this for a minute. We can get them out of here in 30 minutes. I'm just going to sit here and hold you until you break out of my arms, and I don't think you can. I think you're too damn weak to do it. I just grab her and I say, I'm real strong, and you ain't getting out of here till I let you out. God damn it.
Girl, you better put me down right now. I am still your aunt.
You can't tell me what to do.
I know you're strong, but you better put me down right now.
All right, fine. I put her down, but I don't let her go.
You set her down, a little wobbly. She looks to Maggie, and Maggie, of course, bear hugs her and says,
Lila, I thought you'd sang your last song.
And Lila says,
girl, if you talk about singing one more time, I just might.
And with that, once more, the remaining Briars are reunited.
I just run in and hug both of them at the same time. I don't think I've gotten a group hug from my aunts in a decade. I just run in there and just bury myself in them.
They hug you. Lila is a little reluctant, but it's a special circumstance. And Maggie sort of looks over and says, "Don't think we forgot about you two. Y'all get in here."
Oh, good. I was just waiting for an invitation. I didn't want to get in the way.
Hey, none of your family are always invited.
if I have to.
Maggie says, "You do. Now get over here."
Stump severs the psychic link from Salome, and as he's reluctantly walking into the hug, says to Lila, "Don't worry. I'll make sure nothing happens to her. I promise."
Lila looks at you and says, "I don't break promises. You don't either?"
"Never have, never will."
"Good.
Do you want to be stabbed by this knife?"
"The hell is wrong with you?"
"We've all been stabbed. Everyone."
"No. Why would I?"
In a good way.
"No, why would anybody ever want to get stabbed?"
"I don't know. We did it."
"You offered that to Maggie, didn't you?"
"Yeah."
"She took you up on it?"
"Well, first what happened was I was just kind of testing it out, and Salome then got stabbed. And then, she like jumped in front of it, wanted to try to catch a sight, or like this mystical blade thing, and it ended up just hitting her. And then Maggie was like, "Yeah, I'll try it." And then I was like, "What if I hit myself?" So I stabbed myself and did a little bit of damage. Hayden didn't want anything to do with it, though.
Hayden, whatever they're talking about is making Lila's hair turn yellow like those leaves from the trees, and I don't think I like it.
Oh, you know exactly what they're talking about.
Oh, hell.
Yeah, you see a blade form in Stump's hand.
I leave these girls once, and here they are just getting stabbed left and right. God, if I weren't turning over a new leaf.
Salome, I'm like in the middle of this like loving hug, and I'm just like, "Salome, I've been sitting on something for a minute, and I just wanted to wait until we got everything sorted out here, but when you and I have a second, I got some stuff I want to fill you in on."
"Oh, yeah, of course, honey. Whatever you need."
"Like, I mean, have the moment. Like, this is what's more important right now, but just..."
"Yeah.
When we got a sec."
"Okay,
I make a
sure.
link with Hayden and just go, "This is a wild time to bring this up, Hayden, in the middle of this hug."
"I said later. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that it happened at some point."
You're all wrapped in this bear hug. The Briar sisters are reunited once more. Stump, your newfound abilities helped that happen. And Hayden, you hear a voice in your head.
Oh, shit.
"Hi, Hayden. I suppose you've had enough time to think upon my offer."
My eyes widen. I pull the hug apart. I grab Salome's shoulders with both hands, make direct eye contact with her, and say both out loud and in my head, "Nice to hear from you again too, Tiberius."
Shit, Salome freezes.
Tiberius chuckles and says, "Enough games. Let's talk." And with that, we'll pick up next time.
Thanks so much for listening to episode 27 of Mage Hand High Five, The Badlands. Remember to stay tuned after the episode for a little teaser of what we've got going on throughout the month of October. Want to show your support for our show? Want to hear us talk more about it? Then check out our Patreon at patreon.com/magehandhighfive for the tiniest little wafer-thin $5 a month. You get to join in on our extra special other podcast, Mage Hand Down Low, where we talk about the behind-the-scenes of our episodes. You get fun little DM goodies from our DM, Casey Pappas. You get to join in our fantastic Discord community, early access to merch, all kinds of other fun stuff. Just join in on the Down Low and head over to Patreon. Thanks to Jacob Kirshner for our orchestrations and Shane Smith for our logo and our cover art. Check out our website at www.magehandhighfive.com and look for us all across social media. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Discord, and wherever else we may be. We're going to be there at Magehand High Five. Go to your podcatcher of choice and throw a 5-star review our way. They're nice and I like them and they make me feel good and they do great things for the algorithm. So please help us out so we can extend our audience and get even bigger. And now I'm going to shout out all of our subscribers on Patreon in the traditional one-breath method. Kathleen Ayers, Andrew, John Flies with Ravens, Kellen Wilbur, Trout Relief, Chronic Dreamer, Patrick Hickman, Debbie, Nathan Ritter, Chicken Too Tasty, Evan Noon, Avery Spar, A.M. Lovelies, Allison DeVelvis, Das Carpenter, Diana Bacon, Al Forrest Oakey, Liz Spar, Kerry Lee, Jonathan Gunn, Tyler Gardner, El DeSoul, Julada Pang, Laura, Al, Chloe Utley, and Sammy Richardson. I didn't properly prepare myself, but I'm excited about the fact that I'm struggling through it. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your foes about the show. Tell the leaves on the wind. Let their story pass through the whispering waves across the countryside to some unknown stranger across the sea. And when you do it, use the hashtag MHH5 and hey, how about a high five? A lumbering figure approaches from the infirmary. It's breathing haggard and raw. It spreads its large gossamer wings and attempts to fly, but cannot rise above the ground. Its sickly, purple-green skin has grown ashen as it hacks and sputters, a pill of cold iron lodged in its throat. The figure you once knew as Sammy Kent drops to its knees beside you. And through the darkness, you feel its many eyes staring down at you.